shield and had it set up.
Nice, Arinda said, glancing behind him at Gudrid walking on her father's other side. The sun was long since gone, but as she'd predicted, the complex's lights more than made up for it. And in their glow, she could see a small smile playing around the agent's lips. Small wonder. DSS shields were used all across the Empire, and somewhere in Gudry's ISB training, he'd undoubtedly learned how to take them down. Yularen had suggested they eliminate the shield, but in the kind of off-handed way that had implied he was mostly joking. Before the evening was over, he might find himself surprised.
"I'd have thought the operators would have tried to sabotage it before you kicked them out," Gudry commented.
"Before the insurgents kicked them out,"
Talmor corrected, a bit stiffly.
"I might agree with some of their grievances, but I'm not one of them. Anyway, from what I understand, they were rounded up and escorted off the premises before they even knew what was happening."
"And then Nightswan came in?" Arinda asked.
Talmor frowned at her.
"Who's Nightswan?"
"The group's leader," Arinda said. "Didn't you know?"
"I told you, I'm not with these people,"
he said shortly.
"You said your friend was a tech, but Ty?"
"Mostly a tech, but he dabbled in a lot of things," Gudry said.
"He might even have been brought in to keep the shield running. You know where the generator is?"
"Over there somewhere,"
Talmor said, pointing.
"I guess we might as well head in that direction as any other."
Arinda let them get a couple of steps ahead. Then, picking her moment, she slipped behind a parked speeder truck and angled off. She passed that truck, slipped around another one, and dropped to one knee where she'd be out of sight if Gudry or her father looked in her direction. She pulled out her mother's comm and punched her father's frequency. He answered on the second signal.
"Elenia, is something wrong?"
I don't feel well,"
Arinda said, wheezing as if she were having some sort of reaction.
I think it's something in the air."
"Hang on, I'll call the hospital,"
Talmor said, his voice anxious.
"No, it's not that bad,"
Arinda said, wheezing a little more. She had no idea how good her impression was, but the strain and wheezing would hopefully cover up any deficiencies.
"Can you come home? I need you and Arinda to come home."
"Yes, of course. Arinda!"
He broke off, undoubtedly wondering where she disappeared to.
"Please, hurry,"
Arinda said. She turned off the comm, slipped it into her shoulder bag, and stood up. Just in time. Even as she turned back, her father and Gudry appeared around the end of the speeder truck.
"Arinda!"
Talmor called.
"Here,"
Arinda called back, hurrying to them.
"Sorry, I saw a group of men and wanted to check them out."
"What did they look like?" Gudry asked.
"Nothing like the description you gave me, I'm afraid," Arinda said. "Is something wrong?"
"Your mother's been taken ill,"
Talmor said, taking her arm.
"We have to go home right away."
"Is it serious?"
"She says no,"
Talmor said.
"But we're going anyway. Come on, Matai."
"But wait a minute. I need to find my friend," Gudry objected. "Can't I stay? I promise I won't get in anyone's way."
"I don't think,"
Talmor began.
"That's a good idea,"
Arinda interrupted him.
"You can find your way back to the house, right?"
"Sure," Gudry said. "You two go on. I'll be fine."
"I can't let you stay without me,"
Talmor said. But the words were mechanical. His thoughts were clearly with his wife.
"I promised."
"Let me talk to him," Arinda offered.
Without waiting for a response, she took Gudry's arm and pulled him a few steps away.
"Well, this is damn awkward," Gudry whispered. "The old cow gets sick now."
"You can do this alone, right?"
Arinda asked. trying hard to ignore the fact he just insulted her mother.
"Of course," he growled. "Trouble is, your old man won't let me."
"I'll change his mind," Arinda said. "That last speeder truck, the one with the Makrid string crates? You want to find out where it went. Makrid string is a..."
"Is a wire explosive," he interrupted. "Thanks, I know. I'm more worried about Night Swan's collection of police gunships and skim fighters."
Arinda felt her jaw drop.
"You saw gunships? How many?"
"I didn't see them," Gudry said patiently. "I saw a spare parts dump, with enough material to patch up a couple dozen of them."
Arinda winced. "Air combat vehicles. Just what they needed."
"You need to find and tag them," she said. "And..."
"Yeah, thanks. I know my job," he said. "You just get your old man off my back and out of here, okay?"
"Okay."
Still holding his arm, she turned back to her father.
"Okay, we've made a deal," she told him. "You and I will go home and see to Mother. He'll stay for 1 hour. 1 hour and look for his friend. If he hasn't found him by then, he'll come out. Okay?"
Talmor hesitated. His face screwed up with indecision.
"Arinda..."
"It'll be all right, Father,"
Arinda said, letting go of Gudry's arm and taking her father's.
"He'll be fine, and Mother needs us. Come on. Come on!"
"All right,"
Talmor said reluctantly, as he allowed her to pull him back toward the perimeter.
"Just be careful, Matai, and don't mess with anything."
With her father distracted by worry, it was easy to guide him back out through a different checkpoint, one where the guards didn't know that 3 had gone in, but only 2 were coming out. Fortunately, the men and women at this point, too, knew Foreman Talmor Price, and didn't search or even question him. How many of them, Arinda wondered, would still be alive when morning came? But that wasn't her problem. These people were in the center of a combat zone. They'd willingly placed themselves here, and what happened next was on their own heads. That went for Gudry, too. As for Arinda, she had a more important task before her. The job she'd planned from the very beginning of this standoff. The one only she could pull off. Time to get started.
Chapter 27.
An enemy will almost never be anything except an enemy. All one can do with an enemy is defeat him. But an adversary can sometimes become an ally. There is a cost, of course. In all things in life, there is a cost. In dealing with an adversary, sometimes the cost is paid in power or position. Sometimes it is paid in pride or prestige. Sometimes the cost is greater. Sometimes the risk is one's future, or even one's life. But in all such situations, the calculation is straightforward. Whether or not the potential gain is worth the potential loss. And the warrior must never forget that he and his adversary are not the only ones in that equation. Sometimes, all the universe may hang in the balance.
Night Swan was waiting at the appointed place when Thrawn arrived.
"I understood you would wait until my arrival," Thrawn said.
"I got bored," Night Swan said.
His voice holds a casual dark humor. His body stance holds tension, but also weariness. His facial heat is heightened with a low level of caution.
"Besides, I was curious to see if you'd told me the truth." He gestured toward the stars above them. "Even now you could kill me and there would be nothing I could do to stop you."
"You are no use to me, dead or captured."
"So you said,"
Night Swan said.
I assume you're calling on me to surrender, and to persuade my followers to surrender as well?
Interesting that you should call them followers, Thrawn said. When we first met, you were merely a consultant. You hired out your tactical skill to those who would pay, without thought of consequences. You make me sound quite the amoral mercenary, Night Swan said.
His voice holds acceptance and agreement. His body stance holds tension, but also a subtle admission that the assessment is accurate.
But you're mostly correct. Though I'd like to point out that I did save your life during the Dromedar hijacking.
How so?
I persuaded Angel to take that buzz droid back aboard his ship with you and the other prisoners, Night Swan said. I was pretty sure you had something in mind for it, and I wanted it to be available to you.
Why?
Night Swan shrugged.
I told him to deliver all of you to the drop point, but I suspected he was going to kill at least you and the other Imperials. I couldn't stop him on my own, so I had to hope you were clever enough to survive if you had the tools. Hence the droid.
Thank you, Thrawn said. Allow me to point out in turn that, had you not, I had a second droid already moored to the hull.
Ah, of course you did.
Night Swan's smile holds irony.
So much for playing the card of appealing to your sense of obligation.
I find obligations are not a stable basis for a relationship, Thrawn said. Perhaps it is different in the Mining Guild.
Night Swan's eyes widen.
Not really, he said.
His tone holds disbelief and rising fear. His arm muscles tense as his body stance shifts to an escape posture.
How did you know?
You knew mining and metals, Thrawn said. You noticed the disappearance of Dunium more quickly than was likely for one not familiar with metals and the metal marketplace. You also spoke of the Thrugi asteroid belt to Commander Vanto, which supports many Mining Guild operations.
I knew that was a mistake the minute I said it, Night Swan said.
He shakes his head, his body stance relaxing from escape mode to acceptance of defeat.
So how much do you know?
I know that a group observed the rising confusion in the Empire's metal markets and broke from the Guild in an attempt to manipulate that confusion for their own gain. I know that several members subsequently left and went their separate ways. I presume you were one of those.
Yes.
Niceborn's expression now holds a cautious calmness.
The chaos in metal prices was hurting a lot of small businesses, shipbuilders in particular. I joined the group hoping we could siphon off enough from the Navy's demands to help them out.
His lips compress, his expression holding frustration and a brief flash of anger. His facial heat rises briefly, then subsides.
When I discovered they were simply selling our stolen metals back to the Empire through the black market, I left.
And joined instead with insurgents?
Not then, Night Swan said. Not until much later. Most of the people I worked with at first were just ordinary citizens who'd been hurt by the Empire and couldn't get any redress. Justice costs money. Stealing and smuggling metals like Dunium was the most efficient way to generate that money.
Dunium and Tabana gas?
Night Swan smiled. I wish I could have seen your expression when you found out I'd pulled that one off. Part of that one, anyway.
His expression and body stance held memory and thoughtfulness.
Come to think of it, that was probably the first time I worked directly with an insurgent group. The first time I knew I was working with one anyway. Ground-based, though, with no ships, or I wouldn't have had to hire Angel and his Q-Loss crazies.
They will not bother the galaxy ever again,
Yes, I heard, Night Swan said. After that, I don't know. For a while I straddled the line. Still mostly just helping out innocents, but also working with occasional insurgents when they popped up. I thought about going back to the mining guild. But by then they'd gotten wise to the group I'd left with and turned the Empire loose on them. You can guess the result. He smiled. Or don't have to guess because you already know.
I do, Thrawn confirmed.
So you no longer had anyone to turn to but insurgents?
Oh, I could have made a comfortable life for myself without them.
Night Swan purses his lips, his expression holding sudden dread.
But then I started hearing rumors. Stories about something nasty the Empire was up to out in the middle of nowhere. The project that was sucking up all the dunium, iridium, and other metals that they were yanking out of the markets. I heard about whole planets being strip-mined. The old Thrugi facilities I used to work are still officially under Kenawa Corporation control, but are now effectively an Imperial operation. I started getting curious.
His lips compress. His expression holds regret.
Sometimes it's a very bad thing to be curious.
It is never wrong to be curious, but it can sometimes be dangerous. This project you seek, do you wish to stop it?
Night Swan frowns, his expression and body stance holding suspicion. His facial heat again rises.
Why? Are you in charge of protecting it?
No.
You probably should be.
His suspicion is fading.
If they really want to protect it, that is. Would I stop it? I don't know. I suppose I'd first need to know what it is, so I could judge whether or not it's worth all the chaos it's causing. Why do you ask?
Because I, too, am interested in the project.
I would like to hear what you've learned.
Sure.
Night Swan waves a hand toward Creek Path. His expression holds sardonic humor.
Take off that uniform. Come join us. And I'll tell you everything I know.
You know I cannot do that.
And I can't give up information that someday might be vital to these people, Night Swan said. Obligations, you know.
Yet you also have a higher obligation to greater ideals, Thrawn said. Tell me about Sifar.
Sifar?
Night Swan's frown owns surprise.
What about it?
You claim obligation to the people of Creek Path, Thrawn said. The money you would have obtained from the Sifar priest by smuggling operation would have purchased weapons and supplies for them. Yet you deliberately used the same seashell technique I had seen before, in the hope that I would notice and destroy the operation.
Night Swan shakes his head. His expression holds both resignation and admiration. His arm muscles relax, indicating he no longer expects combat on any level.
Sometimes I forget how good you are, he said. Other times I'm glad of it. You're right. I set that one up hoping you'd bring it to a crashing halt. I've seen what spice does to people, and I wanted no part of it.
Yet you worked with them.
Under false pretenses.
His voice holds bitterness.
They told me they were being squeezed between the Aefs and the Sifar government and couldn't get the Empire to pay attention to them. By the time I found out what they were really smuggling, I was already on the ground and couldn't bow out without risking a blaster shot to the head.
You could have alerted the authorities.
Who might or might not have done anything?
Night Swan's smile owns dark humor.
Besides, I had a reputation to maintain. No. My best hope was that you would notice it and deal with it.
And you did. As I also dealt with higher skies on Coruscant, Thrawn said.
Night Swan holds up his hands, palms outward. His body stance holds caution and protest. His face holds a mix of anger and contempt.
Whatever you think you know about higher skies, believe me when I say that assassinations or attempted assassinations were never part of the plan. The sole reason they were suborning bodyguards was to gain access to high-level files for data on the Empire's secret project.
Did you learn anything?
We learned plenty, Night Swan said.
His expression holds determination.
We learned that Grand Moff Tarkin's involved at the top for one thing. We learned the work is being done at a single location, as opposed to being spread out all across the galaxy.
Not entirely correct, Thrawn said. There is a main work site, but there is also a subsidiary one.
Really? Night Swan frowned. Interesting. I don't usually miss things like that.
Inexcusable error, Thrawn said. Most of the materials for the subsidiary location were delivered some time ago, with only small additions since then. As I say, the main worksite is absorbing the bulk of the current shipments.
Thanks. That makes me feel a little better.
Night Swan's voice holds dry humor.
Still, it sounds like we're talking a single main structure, or interwoven structure, rather than a group of large ships or battle stations. Otherwise, it would be safer to split off the ships to different locations.
I agree.
And I'm getting close. Another few weeks...
He stops, the determination fading again into weariness.
But I don't have a few weeks, do I?
That decision is still yours.
Is it?
Night Swan shakes his head. The weariness spreads from his face to his full body stance.
These people have attached themselves to me, Admiral. I can't turn my back on them.
I see, Thrawn said. I have always known that you are a master tactician. I see now that you are also a leader.
Am I?
His expression holds bitterness.
Let me tell you a secret. At one point I had a grand plan for bringing all these insurgent and rebel groups together under one roof.
What stopped you?
Paranoia, he said. Distrust. Squabbling. Fried.
Again, he shakes his head.
I don't know if anyone will ever bring them all together. I just know I couldn't. So much for my leadership skills.
He gestures to Thrawn,
his expression holding an edge of confusion.
What I don't understand is why you still serve the Empire. Can't you see the evil you're helping to perpetuate?
The lights of the mining complex behind Night Swan shone faintly against the low, scattered clouds. Thousands of people waited there, preparing for the inevitable Imperial attack.
I'll give you a scenario, Thrawn said.
You and I face a dangerous predator intent on slaughter. Running is impossible. Tools and weapons are limited. What are your options?
The obvious one is for us to join forces, Night Swan said.
His voice holds hesitation and thoughtfulness.
But you're clearly going for something else.
Not necessarily, Thrawn said. Unity against the common foe is one choice. But there is another.
Which is?
You already know, Thrawn said.
You strike me down so as to make me the easier prey.
While the predator devours me, you hope to find or build a weapon you can use to assure your own survival.
Logical, Night Swan said.
His tone holds quiet revulsion. His body stance indicates a desire to back away from such a thought.
Cold-blooded, but logical. Your point...
My point, Thrawn said, is that it was that choice that lay before me when I decided to visit the Empire.
Night Swan frowned.
The story I heard was that you were rescued from exile.
I was unaware that knowledge had been released to the general public.
It wasn't.
Night Swan's smile holds wry humor.
I had to do some serious digging to find it. As I had to dig to find the records of your time at Royal Imperial Academy, as well as all the other details of your career. I am honored you found me worth such dedication. Night Swan shrugs. To defeat an enemy, you must know them. Not that I've defeated you very often, but you've always been a fascinating study. Now you tell me you weren't exiled?
It was intended to so appear, but that was not the reality. Night Swan smiles faintly. His expression holds anticipation.
Tell me this reality.
I was exploring the edges of the new empire shortly after the Clone War. I had witnessed a small part of that conflict, and had seen the chaos the collapse of the Republic had created throughout the region.
There are theories that both the conflict and collapse were engineered by outside agents.
The causes do not alter the fact that the Republic was unstable, Thrawn said. There were too many different points of view. Too many different styles of political thought and action. The system was by its nature sluggish and inefficient.
And you found the Empire to be the opposite?
At the time I knew little about the Empire, Thrawn said. But during one of my surveys, I discovered a colony of refugee Nymoidians. Once they learned who I represented, they pleaded with me to bring the Chiss to battle against Coruscant. They promised their people would rise up in response, and that together we would bring down Emperor Palpatine and restore the Republic.
I hope you didn't accept their offer.
Night Swan's tone and expression hold contempt.
The Nymoidians have a severely overblown opinion of themselves and their capabilities.
I certainly did not trust their unsupported word, nor did I make any promises. But my superiors were nevertheless concerned by my report.
Because of the Empire? Or because of the Nymoidians?
Because of reality, Thrawn said. There are evil things in this galaxy, Night Swan. Far more evil than the Empire, and far more dangerous to all living beings. We know of some, while of others we have heard only rumors. We needed to know whether the Empire that was rising from the ashes of the Clone War could be an ally against them,
or whether it should instead be collapsed into an easy prey, Night Swan said.
His voice holds dread. You understand now my scenario,
Thrawn said.
I had met a Jedi general during my Clone War investigations that gave me credentials to offer the new Empire's leaders. I was thus the best choice to send.
And so they dropped you somewhere and made it look like you'd been exiled?
Yes, Thrawn said. The encampment was designed to appear as if I had been abandoned for years. In truth, I was only there a few months. We tried several lures to bring an Imperial ship to the planet. On the third attempt, we succeeded. I used my tactical skills to slip aboard the ship, hoping to impress its captain. I succeeded, and was taken to Coruscant.
Where you were made an officer in the Imperial Navy.
A totally unexpected occurrence, Thrawn said. I'd hoped merely to persuade the Emperor to allow me to study the Empire's political and military structure, under the pretext of sharing information about distant threats. But his offer gave me the opportunity to learn much more.
And your study convinced you that it was better to hope the Empire would someday be your ally than to bring it down?
Night Swan shakes his head. His expression holds disappointment.
I'm afraid that uniform has blinded you to reality.
Not at all, Thrawn said. Certainly the Empire is corrupt,
No government totally escapes that plague. Certainly it is tyrannical. But quick and utter ruthlessness is necessary when the galaxy is continually threatened by chaos. And what happens when the ruthlessness breeds more chaos? Night Swan asked.
His tone holds challenge. His body stands briefly, throwing off the weariness to hold fresh energy.
For that is what happens. Repression and revolt feed and devour each other.
Then the revolt must die, Thron said. The danger is too great. The stakes are too high. If the Empire falls, what can replace it?
Justice? Mercy?
Night Swan's smile holds sadness.
Freedom.
Chaos, Thron said. Lawlessness.
The Clone War.
Night Swan shakes his head. Perhaps I have a more optimistic view of my fellow beings than you do. So you consider tyranny to be a bulwark against evil? For how long?
Explain.
How long will you accept tyranny as a necessary part of Imperial rule? Night Swan asked. Until all resistance is silenced? Until all evils are vanquished?
Perhaps your optimism is not as strong as you claim, Thron said. The tone of a government is set by its leader. But Emperor Palpatine will not live forever. When it comes time for his authority to be handed to another, my position as a senior officer will allow me to influence the choice of that leader.
And do you expect that new leader to spread light into the darkness?
There is hope that he will, Thron said. But if evil is victorious, that hope will be extinguished. Forever.
Hope.
Night Swan shakes his head. His body stance holds no such hope.
I fear, Admiral, that you're still dangerously naive on political matters.
He lifts a hand. His body stance holds defeat.
I hope you're right, but I fear you're wrong.
We shall see.
Some of us shall, Night Swan said. Others of us will be long gone. What about the Nymoidians? What happened with them?
To my knowledge, they are still where I left them, nursing their resentments and dreaming of a long-delayed victory, Thron said.
As I said, I made them no promises. Still, that initial contact was the reason I first created and then nurtured an acquaintanceship with the young cadet Manto. When I overheard him speak the name Chiss, I thought he might have been planted aboard the Strikefast by them to secretly observe me.
I assume that wasn't the case?
It was not, Thron said. By the time I was convinced, I had seen other qualities in him. Qualities I have spent the past few years helping him develop. Like you, he has the rare combination of tactical aptitude and leadership.
Ah, Night Swan said.
His voice held sadness.
And now we come to the part where you ask me to abandon my people and my cause and join you in your fight for a better empire.
Not at all, Thron said. After your activities here, you would never be accepted by the Navy.
Nor would I accept such an offer.
But you are correct in that I wish to offer you a position, Thron said. Not with the Empire, but with the Chiss Ascendancy. Night Swan's eyes widen. His expression holds complete surprise.
His arm and torso muscles tighten. His body stands straightening.
You want... Admiral, that's crazy.
Is a human among the Chiss more implausible than a Chiss among humans? Thron asked. It would offer you the chance to stand against forces far more evil than you face now.
Moreover, your work there might someday save the lives of all those who currently stand with you at Creekbath.
And what are those people right now? What would happen to them?
I offer them a promise, Thrawn said.
If they disperse, leaving their weapons behind, this would be the end. What? No retribution?
Nice one's expression and tone hold sarcasm.
No tyrannical hammer to beat back the chaos?
The people of Baton are Imperial resources, Thrawn said. A wise commander never wastes resources without need. Night Swan shakes his head. His expression holds disbelief and sorrow.
I should have guessed that was how you see people.
I see reality, Thrawn said. Your followers may return to their homes and jobs. There will be no reprisals or other action taken against them.
Until you leave.
Night Swan's expression holds bitterness.
Even if Governor Ristos honored your deal, which he wouldn't, it still wouldn't last. The injustices against the people are too great. The arrogance of those in power too deep. Sooner or later, they would rise up again. Only this time they would have no one to lead them. They would be cut down like grain in a field. Their voices silenced before they were ever heard.
So you will stay.
I have no choice, Night Swan said. We have the same sense of duty, Admiral Thrawn. Perhaps we ultimately seek the same end, at least for the distant future.
But we see vastly different roads to that end.
He straightens again. His body stands holding a sense of imminent departure.
May I count on your promise to protect the civilians? Excuse me. The Imperial resources of Krieg Path as best you can?
You may, Thrawn said. I will seek to preserve all the lives under your leadership, combatant or otherwise, to the best of my ability. And my offer of clemency and surrender also stands.
I appreciate that. Good evening, Admiral. And thank you for your time. We've been distant adversaries for a long time. My curiosity is now satisfied.
Is it?
Thrawn asked.
There is still the matter of the Empire's new project. If I were to aid you in your search for answers, would it persuade you to join me? Night Swan stares across the gap between them. His expression is tight, his eyes narrowed. His body stands once again holds surprise.
What exactly do you know?
I have no direct knowledge, Thrawn said. But I, too, have gathered some of the pieces of the puzzle to myself. I may also know where the main worksite is located.
But you haven't gone there to see?
I have not found an opportunity.
Haven't found one? Or have refused to make one? And if you did find it, what then? What would you do? You serve the Empire. And this project, whatever it is, represents a great deal of Imperial resources.
I do indeed serve the Empire, Thrawn said. But I also serve the causes of the Chiss Ascendancy. If I deem this project to be a threat against them, I might find it necessary to reconsider my path. Night Swan's expression holds interest and temptation. His fingers rub restlessly against his leg, the movement holding uncertainty.
And if I surrender and accept your terms, what are you offering?
We will journey to the site together.
And the people of Krieg Path and Baton?
I have given you my terms.
And what are their grievances against Governor Ristos?
I will do what I can. Night Swan shakes his head. His body stands holding resignation.
And therein lies the problem. This is a political situation, and you have no political power. On one hand, we have a puzzle, and a fear of what the Empire is planning. On the other hand, I have real flesh and blood people to protect. I'm sorry.
As am I. Night Swan turns and begins walking toward the mining complex.
I have read about the Night Swan, Thrawn called after him.
Have you?
Nightsworn turns partially back. His face is obscured by shadow. His body stands again, holds weariness, along with a quiet dread.
You refer to the fact that it sings only as night is falling?
Yes, Thrawn said.
You do not expect your stand to succeed, do you?
I know that it won't succeed, Nightsworn said.
That does not necessarily mean the end. I can give orders for you to be taken unharmed.
They will be ignored. Half the troops here are Baeton defense, and Risos is determined to get rid of me.
Then come with me now.
A man must do what he must, Admiral Thrawn, even if his stand is against the fall of eternal night.
He began walking again. A minute later, he was out of sight behind the hills. A minute after that, the sound of an airspeeder whispered across the stillness of the night.
Thank you for not killing him, Thrawn said.
Don't thank me yet.
Colonel Yularen's voice comes from behind. It holds anger and suspicion.
Tell me why I shouldn't shoot you as a traitor to the Empire.
Elenia was surprised to see her husband and daughter home so soon, but she wasn't nearly as surprised as Talmor.
Are you all right?
He asked, enveloping her in a quick hug.
You sounded terrible. Has whatever it is passed?
Has whatever what is passed?
Elenia asked, frowning at him in confusion.
I have no idea what you're talking about.
That was me, I'm afraid. Arinda spoke up, pulling out her mother's comm and holding it out to her. I needed to get back here, and I needed to get away from Matai. This was the simplest way to do it.
To get what?
Elenia asked, her eyes on Arinda as she mechanically took back the comm.
There's going to be a battle soon, Arinda said. A big one. I need to get you out of here before it starts, so you need to start packing.
Arinda, Arinda!
Talmor soothed.
It's okay. They're not going to attack the mine, really. The governor wouldn't dare take any of his precious troops from their bodyguard duty to use against us.
He won't have a choice, Arinda gritted out. There's an Imperial task force overhead, and their admiral has orders to neutralize the insurgents on Baeton. That means Creekpath, and he is going to take it. So you need to gather up everything you can't live without.
Arinda, please.
There's no please, Mother, Arinda snarled at her. There's no please, and there's no time. You need to go pack, and you need to pack now.
She hadn't intended to shout that final word, but she did. And she felt a flicker of guilt as her mother jumped at the unexpected vehemence. But if that was what it took to get them moving, Arinda could live with it.
Come on, Elenia,
Talmor said, squeezing his wife's hand.
Do as she says.
He started toward the stairs. Elenia didn't move.
What about our friends?
She asked, pulling back against her husband's grip, her voice under rigid control.
What about the men and women we work with in the mine?
I'm not here for them, Arinda said. I'm here for you.
There was another long silence.
I see, Talmor said. All right. Come on, Elenia.
And make it fast,
Arinda warned, glancing out the window at the lights of the mining complex in the distance. Because Gudri didn't know anything about this part. And if Gudri found out, she was damn sure he wouldn't like it.
I thought you said you had urgent business elsewhere, Thrawn said, as Colonel Yularen came down the hill, a blaster carbine in his hands. Like his voice, his body stance holds caution and suspicion.
You asked if I'd be returning to the Chimera,
Yularen reminded him.
I said I wouldn't, and I didn't.
You did not want Governor Price and Agent Gudri to know you were coming here to watch them from afar,
correct, Yularen said. Both would have been insulted, though for different reasons. You can imagine my surprise when Commander Vanto informed me that you'd left the Chimera in that freighter you took from Nightswan's Nomad.
I see you ask Commander Vanto to be extra vigilant as well.
And now you're stalling, Yularen said.
He continues forward until he is 4 meters away. His blaster is pointed a few degrees to the side. Not directly threatening, but ready to be brought onto target.
I want to know what you're doing here, and what your business was with Nightswan.
I am an admiral, Thrawn said. You are a colonel. I could order you to withdraw.
Theoretically, yes, Yularen agreed. As a practical matter, the ISB carries more weight with Coruscant than our respective ranks might suggest.
He hesitates a second, then lowers the carbine to point at the ground.
I don't believe you're a traitor, Admiral. But this meeting has the appearance of treason, and that's all your enemies would need to bring you down. Bottom line, you talk to me now, or someday you face them. Which is it going to be?
I invited Nightswan here to offer him a position with my people, Thrawn said. Not only would that have benefited them, but the loss of the insurgents' leader would have collapsed opposition on Baton.
I see, Yularen said.
His voice holds uncertainty.
He turned you down, did he?
You saw him leave.
Maybe he just went for a change of clothes, Yularen countered. You sure he's not coming back?
He is not.
Fine, Yularen said. Now tell me about your light cruisers. Specifically why you've positioned them so far away from the Chimera with those dog-ugly barge things you dragged in from somewhere wrapped around them.
The cruisers are under repairs and unable to fight, Thrawn said. I positioned them at a distance, so they would be out of range of any attack from the surface.
Uh-huh, Yularen said. Sounds reasonable. Except that where they are right now completely opens them up to an attack from space. You remember those ships that got away from Kinshara to Nash?
The existence of such ships has not been proven.
Proof is for jurists and politicians. I'm talking about tactics and strategies. Subjects you suddenly seem to know nothing about. Those cruisers are far enough outside Baton's gravity well that someone could just swoop in, board them, and take them to hell and gone.
He raises his eyebrows, his expression holding a question.
Their hyperdrives are working, correct? That's what Vanto deduced from the repair logs.
Commander Vanto is quite capable in the area of supplies and repairs, Thrawn said. If he states the hyperdrives are functional, you may rely on it.
Glad to hear that, Yularen said. You haven't answered my question.
You are correct that a determined and quick attacker might be able to spirit the cruisers away, Thrawn said. But did you fail to notice the turn of that scenario?
Yularen frowns. The frown vanishes into understanding.
That the cruisers can also jump if an attack is imminent.
Exactly,
Thrawn said. That is why I placed them where I did. The repair barges are attached loosely enough that they will not be a hindrance.
And you separated them widely because...
His expression holds anticipation.
Thrawn remained silent.
Yularen's expression changes to cautious understanding.
Because you don't want any potential thieves to have all three of them lined up in a nice, neat row ready for plucking.
Precisely, Thrawn said.
You possess the same tactical abilities as Commander Vanto, Colonel. I do not know if you also possess his quality of leadership.
You really don't have much political sense, do you? Never mind. I got a transmission from Gudry as Nightswan was leaving. He's made it deep into the creek path base, and has mined both the shield generator and an explosives cache he found. He's keyed both of the triggers onto his comms remote.
His expression holds sudden frustration.
He also said that once he retrieves Price, he'll be ready to get out, and that he can trigger either or both of the mines at your command.
When he retrieves Governor Price?
That's the part that has me worried, too, Yularen said.
Frustration and anger.
Apparently she wandered off somewhere, possibly with her parents in tow, and he can't raise her or locate her comm. He said he'll try their house first. If she's not there...
He shakes his head.
We will find her, Thrawn said. I need to return to the Chimera.
Go,
Yularen said.
Let's just hope we don't have to tell Grand Moff Tarkin that he needs to find Lothal yet another governor.
Chapter 28.
All strive for victory, but not all understand what it truly is. To a soldier, a pilot on the line, victory is surviving the current battle. To a politician, victory is an advantage one can bring to a bargaining table. To a warrior, victory is driving an enemy from the field of battle, or bringing him to surrender. Sometimes the victory is greater than the warrior could ever hope for. Sometimes it is more than he is able to bear.
You're kidding, Arinda said, eyeing the stack of 20 data cards her mother had handed her.
All of them?
All of them,
Alenia said firmly. And if I find that other box before you drag us out of here, there'll be 10 more.
It's the record of your life, Arinda,
Talmor reminded her.
Your dad's recitals, your school debates, your first day working the mine, everything up until you left for Coruscant.
Fine,
Arinda said, managing to check her chrono without spilling the data cards all over the floor.
You've got 15 minutes! And don't forget to grab some of your own mementos.
You're the most important part of our life together, Arinda,
Talmor said quietly.
Well, get some of your own things anyway. You must have some memories from before I was born. The carry bags are where?
Downstairs in the closet off the kitchen, Alenia said.
There's one big one and 3 smaller ones.
Okay, Arinda said. I'll load these in one of the small ones and bring the big one up. Remember, 15 minutes!
She headed downstairs, holding the data cards in a vertical stack pressed between her palms. 15 minutes should be enough time to get out of here before Gudry came back. She was wrong. By exactly 15 minutes.
There you are!
Gudry's voice came from behind her as she reached the bottom of the stairs. Arinda jerked, nearly spilling the cards as she spun around. Gudry had emerged from the dining alcove, a suspicious scowl on his face, a line of dried blood tracing out a path from the corner of his chin, a small blaster gripped in his hand.
Of course I am,
Arinda said as calmly as she could.
Damn! Where else would I be?
Oh, I don't know, Gudry said sarcastically. Maybe at the hospital, your mother being deathly ill and all.
False alarm, Arinda said. We made her some tea, had her put her feet up, and she started feeling better.
Yeah, I can tell, Gudry said. I can hear the party they've got going on upstairs. A packing party, sounds like. Where's the teacup?
Arinda felt her stomach tighten. Stupid, she berated herself. She knew better than to tell unnecessary lies, especially ones that could be easily checked.
What exactly are you implying? I'm saying that you deliberately gave me the slip, he said, taking a step toward her. I'm saying that you were never going to help me find what we needed in there.
You're the professional. I didn't think you needed any help. Whereas your parents do need your help to get out before this place goes to hell. Gudri shook his head. Sorry, sweetheart. This isn't a rescue mission. It's search and destroy. He held up his comm. Luckily for the Empire, I didn't need you. I did the search, and now we're ready for the destroy. Arinda took a deep breath. Damn him anyway. How could he have been so fast? Or maybe, how could she have been so slow? Excellent, she said. What have we got? We have an explosives cache and the shield generator. He grinned slyly. Oh yeah, I got all the way to the shield generator. Arinda looked at his new blaster. I assume that's where you got the weapon? Let's just say the previous owner won't need it anymore, Gudri said. I tied the triggers into my comm. Signal one is the shield, signal two is all the explosives.
All the explosives?
All of them, he said. Hell of a cache. It took four of my caps to cover all the piles. Never mind that. We're ready. The Navy task force and troops are ready, and it's time to get the hell out of here. So put down those cards and let's go.
We can still take my parents with us, Arinda said. They won't slow us down.
I don't care if they can turn into Arcanian dragons and fly us out, Gudri retorted. A party draws attention we can't afford. I'm in charge and they're not going.
I'm a governor,
Arinda bit out, taking a step toward him. I've got the blaster. There was a sudden gasp from the stairs. Arinda's mother had frozen halfway down the steps, gripping a shimmering multicolored crystal, her eyes bulging at the sight of Gudri's blaster. Arinda took another quick step toward Gudri as he reflexively spun to face the unexpected noise, and as he spun back toward Arinda, she hurled her stack of data cards into his face. He was quick, but he was also half-turned. His balance was off, and his blaster was pointed the wrong way. He ducked his head away from the flying data cards, flinging up his free hand to fend them off, then spun back toward Arinda. Too late. She caught his wrist with her right hand, and as he tried to break it free, she swung the arm upward, ducked under it, grabbed the blaster with her other hand, and pulled his elbow down sharply across her shoulder. There was a faint sound as the joint snapped, a barely louder grunt as Gudri reacted to the pain. Arinda twisted the blaster free of his grip and started to dive out of his reach, and gasped in pain as he slammed the heel of his other hand against the back of her head. She fell forward and away from him, her head spinning, her knees wobbling. She threw out her free hand blindly, managed to catch the arm of a chair as she fell past it. She pivoted around the arm and slammed onto her back on the floor. Cute! Gudri growled as he strode toward her, clutching his broken elbow with his other hand. We'll try that again in the dojo after they put my arm back together. Get up! It's time to go.
With my parents!
Arinda managed between gasps of air.
No!
Gudri bit out. Let him die here with all the rest of these Outer Rim freaks. Lifting the blaster, Arinda shot him three times in the chest. He collapsed in a heap, dead before he even had time to change expression. Holding the back of her head, wincing at the knives of pain shooting through her skull, Arinda climbed back to her feet. Her mother was still standing on the stairs, her eyes even wider than before. See? Arinda managed, pointing her blaster at the crystal clutched in Elenia's hands.
You do have memories of your own.
Arinda!
Elenia breathed.
Oh, Arinda!
I had no choice, Mother,
Arinda interrupted.
He was going to leave you and Father behind, and he was probably going to kill me once I'd gotten him out of the area.
Which wasn't true, of course, but if it made her mother feel better, she was more than happy to tell the tale.
Let me get the suitcase.
I'll get the suitcase,
Elenia said, finally coming under.